ZeroDebt100.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're back. Final hour of the Paracast with Gene and Chris. The lights are on again. And we're talking to Lamont Wood. And the suggestion made here, are there indications that they had techniques and technology that's beyond what we would have expected? Because when we talk about the pyramids, we're not looking for advanced technology. We're simply taking what we knew about ancient Egypt and imagining them using that technique or those techniques to build the pyramids.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not necessary that they had electricity, especially in the pyramids. And you don't see any evidence of wires and motors, et cetera. Now, you do see occasional depictions of things that look like light bulbs. The most convincing one is the pictures I've seen are rather convincing on one side. It does look like a neon bulb that kind of gets kind of bulbous. On the other side, you notice it comes out of someone's loincloth. So you may have to admit that we're not talking about a light bulb here. But, again, if they had electricity, I'd love for them to have done so. But I think they had little oil lamps and squinted a lot. So, like I say, where are the wires? Where are the motors? Where are the batteries?
Understood. But, again, we're saying here the pyramid is not out of place in time and space.
No, I think the pyramid is a huge monument to someone's ego. And they used the available techniques to do it. They may have been on the edge of what they could do, but they managed to do it.
Well, in researching this book, did you find other evidence of things that may, on the surface, have seemed to be out of place in time and space, but actually were pretty consistent with the times?
Well, the big thing there, and when I talk about it often with some people, I feel like I'm at a children's party popping balloons, would be the depiction, so-called depiction of UFOs in Renaissance and medieval church art. And the example I have looked into, which a number of people have seized upon, I have to point out that in all cases, the painting was following the contemporary sort of visual vocabulary of how to depict the divine presence or something similar. And as if they're all working from the same script. Yeah, it's called the Bible, you know. The best example would be that monastery in Kosovo, where they have a crucifixion scene. On either side of the crucifix, of the cross, there appears to be these flying machines that look vaguely like Apollo capsules from the early 60s. Not Apollo, Mercury capsules, one-person Mercury capsules, as if they were drawn by some not very skilled folk artist. And if you look at it that way, yeah, it looks kind of convincing. It couldn't be someone attempt to draw a Mercury capsule, which is odd because these things are, the painting was made in 1350. But then you look at it some more, and you also have to look into like Byzantine iconographic traditions, which are rather well established. And in this case, what you have is one of the flying things is red and has a male face and is moving toward the cross, and the other is silver and has female face and moving away from the cross. And the red one would be the sun, and the silver one would be the moon. And they're trying to illustrate the fact that three of the Gospels say that it was dark the day of the crucifixion from noon to 3 p.m. So you have to have something in there that indicates light conditions are changing. So this is a standard way of doing it. And this is hardly the only Byzantine depiction of the crucifixion. It shows something red and male and moving one way and silver and female moving the other way. That was the way that they handled that problem. So it was in the 1960s that people started pointing out that calling these things UFOs and, you know, discovering them, all that stuff. And that was, again, when the Mercury program was in all the newspapers. So I think it basically affected their perception of this. But it goes with the other so-called UFO depictions I've found. In each case, you can pretty much assign it to existing church traditions. It's just, basically we're taking our modern visual vocabulary and imposing it on people who had their own, and it's probably, they had a rather rich, well-defined one.
But that doesn't mean then that they can't apply, because if you lived, you know, in the era of 2 or 3 thousand years ago, and you observe something that today we would identify as ET or advanced aircraft, that's how they talk about it.
Right, of course.
But then you have to say, okay, what is it? What are Ezekiel's wheels?
Yeah, right. And I'm saying that these things can't exist. It's not my belief.
You also have them on. I'm sorry. No, I don't mean to interrupt. But since we're on the subject of religious iconography, I think that's the term. What about the Mahabharata and, you know, very detailed descriptions of Vimanas, flying vehicles that supposedly existed in ancient India? I mean, how do we explain that? That I don't see any mention in your book of the Vimanas and the one supposed city that was destroyed by some sort of nuclear type event where you have a whole plane of melted glass. I mean, there are examples of out of place and out of time machines and events, in this case in India, where we can't really reconcile, you know, ancient descriptions of flying vehicles and instructions on how to build them, even in the Mahabharata.
Well, my reaction to that is similar to my reaction to the space warfare scenes in the first version of Star Wars. And they're zipping around there and they're shooting at each other and stuff. And orbital velocity, that wouldn't work. You wouldn't be close enough to see each other. Accelerating like that would kill you. Now, I forgot how to pronounce it, but there again, it's very visual. It would be very exciting to watch. But I don't think it's realistic. I think it's someone's imagination at work, just as it was in the Star Wars movie. So I may sound dismissive, but that's my take on it.
Well, it's Uncle Occam again.
Yeah.
Well, the whole idea of Vimanas, and, you know, you can even go down and look at Solomon and flying carpets and, you know, I mean, there's other examples from, you know, religious texts that indicate that there was a level of high technology that ancient peoples somehow had access to, but some sort of evidence of that in terms of empirical scientific evidence doesn't exist anymore. Do you feel that all this is allegory and it's all, you know, just people being creative, you know, thinkers and artists, if you will, in terms of interpreting ancient events, or do you think there's some sort of germ of truth there?
No, I think most of it is written for entertainment purposes. And the fact that a little of it is evocative of subsequent technology is about what you expect. But I think most of it is done for entertainment purposes, and we shouldn't take it that seriously. Especially flying carpets. Talk about impractical.
I wanted to throw that one in there just to kind of stir up the pot a little bit.
Rather inefficient. Where are the creature comforts?
Yeah.
If you're going to fly, at least you want to have some kind of enclosure, because you got to think of the wind.
Right.
Just the wind itself could be sufficient to drive you a little bit nuts, you know?
And you need someone to give you those little peanut things that they give you on the flights.
But, of course, on the desert, it was 130 degrees. They might look forward to that, you know, just sniff around and 100-mile-an-hour wind and whatever, you know, whatever. So...
we're not forcing you to believe in ET, you understand?
Oh, no, I understand.
Now, we want to look at all the possibilities and not say, well, I decree based on Occam's razor that there has to be a simple explanation, even though we don't know what the explanation is, we're just guessing.
Right, exactly.
You weren't there, I don't think that you did the quantum leap and you jumped back into the past or anything, or you went into some kind of dimensional anomaly and ended up at 1430 BC or something, or wherever you intend to go. But
it's this Deus Ex Machina, in my opinion. It's just too easy.
The book is called Out of Place in Time and Space, subtitled Inventions, Beliefs, and Artistic Anomalies That Were Impossibly Ahead of Their Time with Lamont Wood. You're listening to Gene and Chris on The Paracast.
expect professional service from your doctor, your accountant, and even the girl who takes your morning coffee order. Why not from your domain registrar, too? Namecheap.com provides stellar service with no sneaky upselling. We offer more features and security options for your website than there are ways to order a latte. And new domains come with WhoisGuard to protect your personal info. At Namecheap.com, you can get your domain for as low as $2.99. Now is a great time to get to know Namecheap.com.
Neighbors, do you need to bring the final touches to your latest podcasts? Clean up the soundtrack of that holiday video. Mix together a few takes from your last jamming session. Process the audio files of the video game you're creating to sound just right. But look no further. Whatever audio-related task you're looking to perform, Amadeus Pro is the tool for you. It's the Swiss Army knife of sound editing. Go to HairerSoft.com. HairerSoft.com.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluating. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800. But your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth a zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it, now you can. Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We continue with the man who wants to find a simple explanation and hope it's the right one. Lamont Wood, the book is out of place in time and space. We're exploring the mysteries, trying to figure out what went on and when. Now, Chris, we had a question from the audience somewhere a while back. Can you dig that up and let us know what it is?
Yeah, this one comes from Jerry Brett, and he's He's a fairly recent addition to the forum community, and it's a rather lengthy question, and it refers to a post of a thread at the forum.paracast.com that I talk about an anti-creativity bias that seems to exist in culture. And I think this goes back into, all the way back into ancient times and all the way to the present. And he says, in one of your posts, Chris, you discuss, do you have an anti-creative bias? That was the title of my thread. And he says, we often look back in our Western history, the Inquisition comes to mind, and say, look how the establishment of church and government restricted people's thoughts and controlled their ability to think creatively. That said, many of these anachronistic anomalies, out of place or time inventions, were discovered or rediscovered in those unenlightened times. Today, creativity in the fringes of science continually comes under the scrutiny of the scientific method, and many creative ideas are at first ignored, ridiculed, or suppressed. Would it be fair to say that today, science and its established foothold in the mainstream can as much be a hindrance to the creative mind as those before mentioned oppressors of old? He mentions that he heard you on another paranormal broadcast, and there is no time travel involved in his book, just observations of what appear to be anomalies. He says he looked up the child's helicopter, and it appears that this was an invention of the Chinese, not a time-traveling space alien planting anomalies on saviors or in icons. So I think basically the thrust of his question here is, could it be that one of the reasons why these types of anomalies exist is because they weren't recognized at the time because of the culture, and it's only during future generations where, you know, our creativity and our anti-creativity bias, I should say, doesn't come into play as much? I mean, could that be an explanation for why some of these anomalies were not really acknowledged or even understood at the time?
Well, yeah, absolutely. In many cultures, there's no room for creativity because everyone is, you're supposed to know your place and accept it. And to do something that lets you leave your place in society and get rich, like inventing something, that is frowned upon. And there are such cultures right now. We're not in one. But some of those cultures are out there, and they resent us greatly, and they plot against us, and we fill in the blank. So there is that. Now, as far as modern science being a wet blanket on creativity, if you're going to make a living as a scientist, you've got to be able to basically get someone to hire you. And to do that, you have to fit in and convince them that you can contribute to whatever project they had in mind. And whatever project I had in mind that's already gotten funding is probably not really from out of left field. It's something that's already established and that's not very controversial, rather. So, yes, it can be a wet blanket just because it's basically not so much a branch of big business, but it's sort of modeled on big business. If you want the money, you're going to have to play along. Now, inventions still get made. There is still progress, especially around the edges. But as far as doing something that would make everyone think you're crazy or that they would dismiss as something frivolous, you would be very slow to do that. And that brings us back to the helicopter. Again, it was probably considered frivolous. No one paid any attention to it, as well as those steam-powered toys the Greeks and Romans had. Frivolous. No one paid any attention to that. But have I answered the question? I forgot. I lost my train of thought again. So...
It seems to me that it tends to be the visionaries and the artists that come up with a lot of these anomalies, and possibly they're just inspired by their creative imaginations, and it's only in hindsight that when we look back and we say, wow, that doesn't look right, that possibly we identify, you know, a hidden sort of germ of creativity in some, you know, long ago artist who happened to come up with some sort of visual or, you know, a representation of, you know, in the case you mentioned Jonathan Swift, I think is a classic example of an artist who came up with some out of place and out of time observations about astronomical, you know, in terms, I think, what was it? He He talked about, I think, the moons of Mars, if I remember correctly. And that was back in the early 1700s. And I think you also mentioned that Voltaire mentioned Martian moons a couple of decades later. So it seems like artists tend to be the ones that come up with depictions of out of place and out of time technology or facts. And then it's only in hindsight that the rest of us pick up on it.
Yeah, well, let me pick up on that for a moment. You got to remember, the average artist is not really constrained by physics and, and logistics and all that stuff. Because they're
well, Uncle Occam.
Yeah, Uncle Occam. Yeah, they're depicting things. Now, in my researches, I came across one big counterexample of a guy who was not only way ahead of his time, but managed to reduce it to practice and actually build real things. And accomplish something with it. And that would have been Archimedes, again, back in the city of Syracuse in 212 BC or so. And he was able to defeat Roman armies with these inventions he came up with. Apparently, he was a genius of full government and financial backing, something you rarely see, but he pulled it off. Now, when I started writing this book, people seemed to think that I was going to be doing a lot of stuff with Leonardo da Vinci, because he designed all these things that were way ahead of their times. He rarely reduced any of it to practice. It was all, in most cases, drawings. And, like, he had that drawing of the helicopter. It wouldn't have worked because there was no mechanism for countering the torque. And the blade would have turned one way and the body would have turned another and wouldn't have been practical. So going back to Jonathan Swift, he was a writer who wrote satire and travel books and combined them in Gulliver's Travels. And at one point, his hero is in a land, I forget which one, Lilliput or something. And Swift wants to show that the scientists there are superior to European scientists. So he depicts them as having made all these astronomical discoveries unknown in Europe, including two moons of Mars, which he then goes on to describe in more detail than you would expect. He talks about how far they are away from Mars in terms of planetary diameters and their orbital period in terms of hours.
And we'll get into Jonathan Swift and the Moons of Mars with Lamont Wood. The book is Out of Place in Time and Space. And you're here with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Alex Jones here with vital information concerning our nation's fragile food supply. Folks, there are some truly dangerous trends forming, and I think it's important for my listeners to do three things right away. Number one, study the past. History really does repeat itself. Number two, learn to spot the dangerous food shortage trends. Number three, take decisive action. A perfect storm is brewing, or a global food crisis. That's why I'm telling everyone to read the new book, Rising Prices, Empty Shelves. Warning signs that trigger the deadliest famines in history. Don't get caught unprepared when the crisis hits. This book is only available at risingprices.emptyshelves.com. You'll also get a free copy of Supermarket Survival, How to Cut Your Grocery Bills in Half. Again, that website is risingprices.emptyshelves.com. That's risingprices.emptyshelves.com.
If you drive for a living,
You don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
You know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health, and most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of most alkaline minerals available. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins and acid, helping you to regain your energy and health. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body to rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen, and raises the pH of your body to optimal levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we jump to Jonathan Swift.
Correct.
A couple of those moons on Mars with Lamont Woodley. Gene and Chris, okay, let's find out now, as they say, the rest of the story.
Okay. The short answer, which I will now flesh out, is that he talks about the moons of Mars 150 years before they were discovered. He, in Gulliver's Travels, he depicts these two moons and then as existing, well, and then describes them in terms of their distance from Mars in terms of planetary diameters and their orbital period in terms of hours. And they're fairly close to the planet and rotate and orbit it in a matter of hours. It's the short story. And 150 years later, they discovered Deimos and Phobos orbiting Mars, and they have rotational distance of only a few planetary diameters and orbit Mars in a matter of hours. So it looks like he was eerily accurate. In this case, I have to argue that he just got lucky. And in this case, I don't feel so silly as I do in some other cases saying the guy got lucky. He wanted to show that the astronomers of this Lilliput or whatever it was that Gulliver had ended up in had pretty much confirmed Kepler's laws of planetary motion, which implied that the celestial realm is governed by the same laws of science that govern our actions here on the surface of the Earth. And Kepler's laws of planetary motion involve a ratio between a planet's our body's orbital period around its central body and the distance from that body. And with two moons, you can show that ratio. And if you do the math, yes, it does. The moons he invented do uphold Kepler's laws of planetary motion. However, if you plunk them down into the real Martian gravity field of Deimos and Phobos, they don't follow the ratio. They're off by about a factor of six. So, in fact, he invented them without knowing anything about Martian gravity or any real knowledge of astrodynamics, etc.
So what you say here is if enough people invent something in a fictional story, sometimes they'll get these things right.
Yeah, and he got it. And really, it's not that it's deceptive of how accurate it looks. It really isn't that accurate. Presumably, he noticed that the Earth has one moon, and then you have Mars, and then you have Jupiter. Jupiter had four moons, so in between, Mars should have at least two moons. With three, it would require more mass to make it match Kepler's law, so he just stuck to two. And so there we have it. Now, so like I say, 150 years later, they discovered actual moons there, and it seems deceptively familiar, but it's really only that. It's all familiar. It doesn't really match this description.
So the person who created the communicator on Star Trek, whether it's Gene Roddenberry or one of his writers, he didn't know that would really happen, but it seems sensible.
Yes, well, but based on other stuff, they had at that time, you got to remember, wireless telephones and walkie-talkies were clunky and cost more and were fairly big. It doesn't match the technology we had.
Cell phone was not invented in the 60s. It was invented in the 70s by a guy from Motorola, but obviously it was based on two-way radio technology.
Right, and you could have two-way radio phones. There were a certain number allowable in every city. It cost a fortune, obviously. You had to be on a waiting list because you had to share bandwidth with everyone else. With cell phone technology, you have to share bandwidth with everyone in your block, basically, so it makes it much more practical.
Well, now, of course, we still have bandwidth problems when you get those drop calls.
Right. Well, when you sell hundreds of millions of them, there's a limit, you know.
Well, they don't care about it. That's the problem, too, is that the wireless carriers, I think, provide the minimum amount of service they can deliver before you start screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And if you scream too loudly and there's too much customer churn going to other carriers, they'll take a few billion. If they're not trying to spend $39 billion to kill a competitor, they'll spend a few billion to give you better service.
Right. All cold mathematics out there.
That's it.
And they'll say anything to you that they think will make you feel better on the phone.
So that's why they didn't build all these advanced aircraft 100 or 200 years earlier.
No, I don't think the phone company was involved in that, really. I think that was because they couldn't pull off the necessary lightweight motors. Steam just didn't work. So,
of all the items that you examine for the book Out of Place in Time and Space, do you have a single item, and maybe you've mentioned it already, but a single item that just totally got you gobsmacked, as they say in England?
Oh, don't say anything. There are so many. Again, I mentioned the Voynich manuscript, which is just disturbing any way you look at it.
No, it's not all the naked women that are depicted in there.
No, it's not on every page.
You know? Just check.
Okay, right. No,
this is a family radio show. We can't get into the implications.
Right. But no, it's the totality of it. In fact, it makes no sense that it even exists. But there's a lot of artifacts out there that make no sense that they even exist, but that's because we don't share the basic assumptions of whoever built the thing or made the thing. And if that's the main takeaway from the book, it would be that you cannot assign your agenda to everyone else.
And we're guessing, really. I mean, when you say, I know that this is a simple way of doing it, we don't know what went on in that person's head, where they were at, what experiences they had, what they encountered, or anything like that.
Right. But again, I keep coming back to Archimedes. He came up with these huge machines that defeated the Roman army. The Romans came into possession of the city, and you don't hear any further mention of those machines. Apparently, they just used them as kindling. They probably didn't understand it themselves. And he invented the so-called death rays. And modern analysis of its final, last surviving manuscript indicates that he understood what we now call calculus, which we usually think was invented by or about the time of Isaac Newton, about 1700. And he also understood what we now call number theory, which we date back to about 1890. And there he was sitting, actually, 212 BC or so, writing this stuff. So that's jaw-dropping. But it's inexplicable. No, the guy was a genius, obviously. Again, there is the Jules Verne and his fairly accurate description of the Apollo program 100 years before it started. Another theme, though, that always caught my eye, it's not really inexplicable, but it really catches my eye, would be the pre-modern attempts to build a computer. It's just there's always been this underlying hunger for computational power, and a few people, given the least a hope of succeeding, will have made a run at it, including the two people I described in the 1820s and 1830s, Babbage and Lady Augusta Byron. who tried to build a mechanical one. Modern analysis shows it probably would have worked, but they fell afoul to what we now call creeping featureism, which, and if you see this in a modern project, be sure and speak up, because basically what you do is you come out with something that seems reasonable and make a plan based on that, and then the next day you a whole bunch of new ideas you want to add to it. So then you have to redo the original plan. And then you're stuck in this loop. You keep adding things to it, and that wrecks the original plan. And that is what happened in this case. And it's not the last, let's say, computer development project that fell afoul of that, but certainly wrecked them. But which would be my favorite? Oh, boy. I guess I'm fond of all of them. But the eeriest one to me was the one about Vannevar Bush and the magazine article he wrote in 1945. He had been President Roosevelt's science advisor during World War II. And in 1945, he wrote an article complaining basically that the paper-based information management tools then available had become totally inadequate. And he sits down to describe what he would like to see.
And then we want to get into that in a moment, because Vannevar Bush is also a figure in some UFO-related speculation not get into.
No.
We understand that. Lamont Wood joins us.
Okay.
We're talking about all those crazy anomalies with Gene and Chris. You're in the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out, iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products, but increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water, and because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
Hello, friends. Alex Jones here. You all know I've worked for years with Steve Shank and eFoods Direct. I have eFoods for my own emergency food supply. You know, Steve, life is different now for all of us, isn't it?
Very different. People are using this great food to survive the present hurricane season, and we've already had $40 billion worth of damage from floods, storms, quakes, and droughts. And that's just the first 8 months of this year. Natural disasters are newsworthy, but only touch a few of us Americans. The huge issue of the Greatest Depression is on everyone's mind. The unemployment, the loss of homes, lost businesses, and skyrocketing food costs are hitting every American. So everyone needs food security.
Folks, this month you will get free shipping on every food order from eFoods Direct. That's right. Every order gets free shipping starting September 6th. Get stocked up with the best storable foods out there with eFoods Direct and be prepared for any emergency before it happens. To take advantage of this special, call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Yes. Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alley-C. Why Alley-C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alley-C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alley-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alley-C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alley-C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alley-C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alley-C. For more information and to order Alley-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alley-C today.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
We are back with Lamont Wood, and by the way, he has also written a lot of blogs for Information Week if you want to explore a lot of the technological aspects of our world, covering such things as printers, servers, and green business. Yeah. I had a keyboard the other day, by the way, that works on light to draw the power. But we'll go into that in another time. We're talking about Vannevar Bush, someone who is a figure in the UFO mystery, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. Lamont, explain.
Well, there's a bigger mystery than that. Let's see, he wrote a magazine article in 1945 complaining that the paper-based information management tools then available had become completely inadequate. And if anyone would know about that, it would be him, because he had been president Roosevelt's science advisor during World War II and had struggled with things like developing the atomic bomb and jet airplanes and radar and a bunch of other stuff. He's probably wading through piles of paper every day. And in this magazine article, he sat down to describe what he would like to see, which would be information on an electronic form that you could establish links between when you saw them and store these links and call them up later and display it on your desk on these translucent screens, presumably from some kind of high-density microfilm, although he didn't go into great detail about what the technology ought to be. Now, taking as a totality, you realize what he's talking about is a web browser with a forward and back button and URLs and a keyboard and a little scanner to add things, except he didn't really foresee the Internet. He assumed that all this would be built into your desk, and it would be updated once a month to the post office with the latest journal articles and whatever. But the thing is you can call this article up online and read it on your web browser, and it's really eerie reading it, realizing he's talking about what you're doing right then. And he had no idea. He was just hoping for this in 1945. And again, I guess, facing the same problem, maybe engineers often think in parallel lines, and we ended up with something that answers what he was asking for. But again, the people who designed web were, of course, under the same pressure and wanted to accomplish something similar. But it is just startling. Now, did he have some genuine foreknowledge? As I point out in his article, he gives an example of using it to research a particular topic involving why the English didn't trade their longbows for the longer-range Turkish bows that they encountered during the Crusades. And he thinks it was just an example of cultural inertia. And he gives the example of someone doing this research and deciding it's cultural inertia. And I point out, if you do the research nowadays, the first thing you discover is that those Turkish bows did not work in the presence of humidity. They had to be stored in heated containers. They were made out of exotic glue that was derived from the mouth parts of Danube River sturgeon or something bizarre. And back in England, they would have been useful only for kindling. They wouldn't have worked at all. So, in other words, the British weren't really dumb when they did not adopt that technology. But obviously, he didn't have access to modern research tools and the contents of those tools. He was just making up something based on something he'd heard someplace. So, no, he was not tied into something from the future. He was simply speculate. Now, as far as his participation in some super government running the country and as a front for UFOs are really good luck to them. That's all I can say.
Well, basically, what I'm getting from what you're saying, in your book and here in your appearance on the Paracast, is necessity is the mother of invention. Going back to
right.
the old cliche that
right.
If there's a need for some new device or tool or method, it's a natural process for that need to be actualized by some creative individual out there. Which gets back to our questioner's point about creativity, that it's the creative types in our societies and our cultures that tend to come up with the ideas that then presage the invention, which then gets actualized.
Right. At some point, something has to be invented from nothing. And to assign that process to some kind of deus ex machina, I think, is a little demeaning, especially as we see it going on all around us, and I'm pretty sure there's no ET involvement.
Well, they have to also think out of the box. I mean, Henry Ford once say that if they took customer surveys of what they wanted, they would have had a faster horse and buggy?
Yeah.
So somebody has to kind of say, let me dream of something new, a mass-produced car, a telephone with a touch screen, mm-hmm. or a tiny computer, like
right,
the one on Star Trek Next Generation.
Now, I'd like to make two points at this point. I can remember, I'm getting old here. One is that it almost doesn't matter. Well, there's two things. One, the rule of thumb is that if it's conceivable, someone has tried it. You probably didn't work in most cases. But the ones we do hear about and the ones that do affect us are the gadgets that can be used in what's called a network effect, or one person inventing writing for his own purpose. That's interesting. But having a literate population, that creates a new sort of civilization. Henry Ford building one automobile or horseless carriage for one person, I mean, that's a nice feat. But mass producing them for a nation, and then which then builds nice roads, and that creates something new, doesn't it? One telephone, or two telephones, need two of them, is interesting, but the wire of the country, that is another thing altogether. So it almost doesn't matter what the gadget is that you're inventing. The question is it possible to get a network effect out of it? And that is what really affects civilization, in my opinion. Like I say, books are nice, but be able to mass produce them with a printing press is something else altogether.
And, well, nowadays, it's your e-book reader.
Yes, exactly. And I would also point out that the effect is usually, you really can't foresee what it's going to be. Going back to what I said when we first got on here, yes, I've been following high technology for years, and you would think I would have thought that the camera phone was a great idea, and everyone would latch on to it, and the effects would be far-reaching. No, that was dumb. No one's going to use that. Come on. You're just hoodwinking teenage girls with some shiny gadget, you know. But I was wrong. It's been widely adopted, and it has far-reaching effects.
So we can't hire you as the head designer at Apple Incorporated when Johnny Ivey leaves.
No, I'm not sure I'd keep a straight face, actually, but anyway, for a number of reasons. Having followed Apple all the time, the joke is that the difference between them and the Boy Scouts is the Boy Scouts have adult supervision.
Well, maybe that's how it works.
Maybe
how they succeed.
How it works, yes. But
you have to look at the thing with the eyes of a child.
Right, exactly.
And imagine the future. If you get too old, get out of the business.
Right.
You
know? And I'm pretty much too old at this point, I think, for that. But as I went back, going back to the thing I discovered, there's this ongoing theme that they don't pay attention to toys, but they should. There's all sorts of stuff going on there. Little steam engines, flying machines, wheeled objects, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, of course, you know, fanciful stories.
And fanciful stories, yeah.
The sense of wonder.
Look at what all the G.I. Joes in the 60s did to this particular day and age.
Oh, God, yeah. But skateboards. How did they do that? If everyone had that, what would it lead to, you know? And why are we bothering with all these heavy automobiles when we can zoom along anyway, you know? It doesn't take that much to learn it. So,
in some cities, of course, when it comes to cars, you wonder why they learn to drive, but that's another story. The book is called Out of Place in Time and Space, subtitled inventions, beliefs, and artistic anomalies that were impossibly ahead of their time. Tell our listeners where they can find more of the things you do, Lamont Wood.
Well, for this book, you can, of course, go to your bookstore and loudly demand that they stock it.
Scream loudly, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And right. Just get the title right, or my name. Lamontwood. Or you can find it under the name on Amazon. Other than that, I mostly write for computer and industrial magazines. And
Which is why we're going to invite you on the other show, The Tech Night Owl Live. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Chris O'Brien, tell us more of the things that you've got going.
Well, ourstrangeplanet.com is where you can find more of my work, and also I'm a moderator at the forum.theparacast.com, and I'm sure we're going to have a lively discussion after Mr. Wood's appearance here on the Paracast, and I can't look forward to it enough. I think that this has been a great show. Lamont, thank you so much for being on, and we're going to have some fun on the forums, and you're invited to participate as little or as much as you'd like.
Okay, glad to hear it.
On next week's episode, The Paracast, we'll have Peter Robbins talking about his friend, Bud Hawkins, who passed away recently, also the Rendlesham UFO case, all this and more next week on The Paracast.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast. America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24-7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.